I'd like to speak a little bit tonight about Reb Shimon Shkop. He was a famous Rosh Yeshiva in Europe. He was born something like 1860 or so. And he was born in a village in Lithuania. And at the age of 12, his parents felt that there was no Malamed in town who could teach him. So they had to send him to the Miri Yeshiva at the age of 12. He learned in the Miri Yeshiva in Europe for 3 years. And then he felt that he needed something bigger and better. So he went to learn in Balozhin. He learned in Balozhin for 6 years. and then the story goes that the Rosh Yeshiva at that time was the Nitziv. The Volozhin Yeshiva was founded about 1801, 1802, something like that, by Rav Chaim Volozhiner, who was the, so to speak, the foremost Talmud of the Vilna Gaon. Hard to be a Talmud of the Vilna Gaon. The Vilna Gaon didn't give it any public shiur. Rav Chaim Volozhiner used to feel uncomfortable. Why they called him the outstanding student of the Vilna Gaon? He used to come a few times a year to talk to the Vilna Gaon and learning for half an hour. That was the whole thing. But he was never really a student in the sense of sitting in a classroom. Vilna Gaon was not really a teacher. But Azot, so Rav Chaim Volozhiner founded Volozhin Yeshiva, and it lasted for about 90 years, and then it was closed by the Russian government, 1891, something like that. They kept on insisting that you have to introduce more and more secular studies. So at first they remained open, with a little bit secular studies, and then the government insisted they have to introduce so much secular studies, it was a little ridiculous. There was hardly any learning going on. So there was a big machlokes. The Rabbanim had a big meeting to discuss whether they should close the yeshiva or not. So many Rabbanim felt it's better to have a yeshiva with 2-3 hours of learning every day and secular studies the rest of the time, rather than to have no yeshiva at all. And at that time, Rav Chaim Soloveitchik was the co-Rosh Yeshiva with Rav Chaim Soloveitchik, who married the granddaughter of the Nitziv. The Nitziv had a son-in-law, Rabbi Foyle Shapira, Rabbi Foyle Olozhiner. Rav Chaim Soloveitchik married his daughter. So the Nitziv, his wife's grandfather, and Rav Chaim Soloveitchik were the co-Rosh Yeshiva when the whole ASIC was happening. Rav Chaim insisted that they have to close the yeshiva, and that was it. There were many gedolim who didn't agree, but they closed the yeshiva. So the Rosh Yeshiva, when Rav Shimon Shkop learned in Volozhin, those 6 years, the Rosh Yeshiva was the Nitziv. And at first, he didn't attend the shiurim of the Nitziv. The Nitziv had the old Derech HaLimud, and Rav Chaim Soloveitchik had the new Derech HaLimud, so different from each other. And they divided the East. The Nitziv would give a shiur Sunday, Monday, Tuesday. He would learn about the Patimor every day. Rav Chaim would give the shiur Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, and Shabbos they would come. And each one would go weiter. The Nitziv covered around 3 blocks. Rav Chaim covered around 3 blocks. I don't understand how the students attended the two shiur. How did it blend in together? It's such a different style. So Rav Kook was in Volozhin at that time. He didn't go to Rav Chaim Shir. He didn't like it. Others didn't go to the Nitziv Shir. They only liked Rav Chaim Shir. Most of the students went to both Shir. So they write in the biographies that Rav Shimon Shkop didn't care for Rav. He didn't go to the Nitziv Shirim. He felt he's going to learn on his own. Wasn't interested in the Shirim. And then one night he was learning in the Smedrish. And he got stuck on a Rashbam in Baba Basra. And then Nitziv's apartment used to be adjacent to the Beis Medrash. So Nitziv would come into the Beis Medrash every night to see if the boys are learning. So he was walking up and down the aisles and the boys were learning. So Reb Shimon Shkop asked him, can I ask you a kasha? So he said, yes. So he says, he has a Rashbam. He doesn't understand Pshat. So then Nitziv said, that Rashbam, when I was your age, I cried so much and I davened so much and I was mishtateach al kever ovis al kibei tzadikim that they should show me pshat men hashamayim and that Rashbam and ad hayom hazeh I don't know pshat and that Rashbam. So Reb Shimon Shkop was so taken by that. He went to be mishtateach Kibbutz Tzaddikim in order to learn Pshat from the Rashbam. So he figured probably worth it to listen to this man's shiur. So he started going to the shiur. Rab Chaim used to prepare the shiur in advance with a group of people, and then he would deliver the shiur. The boys would ask kashas on the blood gemara. Rab Chaim's shiur would be to give pshat and the gemara to straighten out all the kashas. So Rab Shimon was very friendly with Rab Chaim. He never refers to him as his Rebbe. Rab Chaim was older. He was a co-Rosh Hashiva then. Rab Shimon refers to him with respect, but he doesn't really refer to him as his Rebbe. Shimon developed his own style of learning. So the story goes that a wealthy balabas came to the Netziv and he said he wants a good bacher, best bacher in Yeshiva, whatever. Good bacher, he's a wealthy man and he's prepared to support him for a few years. He should sit and learn to become a big gadol. So the Netziv suggested the shidduch with Reb Shimonshkop. And then the wealthy balabas lost his whole fortune. And apparently all the Talmidim in the yeshiva thought for sure that Reb Shimon Shkap is going to back out from the shidduch. Because the whole shidduch was based on the assumption he's going to support him. And Reb Shimon did not back out. So Rav Kook, who was a Talmud in the yeshiva at that time, used to tell her later, when he lived in Eretz Yisrael, he would tell over the way they were also taken by Reb Shimon's princely attitude. That he felt Lloyd died, that the man lost his wealth, he should lose the shidduch with his daughter also. I'll give him a heart attack. How can he do that? So they all thought that it was a great godless on the part of Reb Shimon that he didn't back out from the shidduch. So he married a girl at the age of 20 when he got married. He had to go into business with the father-in-law because the father-in-law couldn't support him. The mazel was that the girl's uncle was Reb Lezer Gordon. Reb Lezer tells her. The one who he was the rabbi in Telz, and he founded the yeshiva in Telz, Telz Yeshiva. So two, three years after the marriage, Rav Lezer tells her contacted Reb Shimon Shkop, because at the chasen Reb Shimon Shkop said a big Dvar Torah, and it was a knockout Dvar Torah. It was his style, Reb Shimon's style of learning. So Reb Lezer tells her his wife's uncle contacted him, sent him a letter, he invited him to be a Magid Shir, an assistant Magid Shir in the Telz Yeshiva. So he accepted the offer and he came and he gave Shurim in Telz, and it was a big Kiddush. He had a different style of Shir. He started his career as a Magid Shir at the age of 24, and it was such a different style of Shir. Talmidim are flocking from all over in order to listen to his Shir. And then later on, there was a machlokes. The few yeshivas, there was a big machlokes about introducing limud hamusa. So there was a machlokes in Telz also. So I never read all of the details. Rav Dov Katz, the author of Tnuas HaMusar, published the many editions of Tnuas HaMusar. It's available. But he wrote a book about the Pulmus HaMusar, about the Machloikas, about the Musa movement, that he only made one edition, and he didn't print too many copies, and it's out of print, and it's not available. But I'm sure he discusses it what the issue was and tells the yeshiva. So because of the Machloikas about introducing Musa, so Rav Shimon Shkop left the yeshiva after 18 years, and he went to different communities. Then during the First World War, he was in a different community. The last years of his life, he was in Grodno. His yeshiva was in Grodno. Reb Shimon Shkop, they say the difference between Reb Chaim and Reb Shimon Shkop. Reb Chaim said you have a lot of psukim that exeris hakasav, you have dinim. Our responsibility, our job is not to try to understand why the dinim are so, just understand what the dinim are. What does it say that Reb Shimon Shkop thought that not only should we figure out what the dinim are, we should try to figure out why the din is so. Reb Chaim didn't like that. He didn't hold from trying to figure out why the dinim should be so. When Reb Shimon Shkop learned in Volozhin, a very close friend of his was Reb Chaim Oizer. And years later, after Reb Chaim Oizer was appointed the chief rabbi of Vilna at a very young age, I think 21 or 22 or something like that. And he had under him a whole group of big oinim adirim. Unu Shas, Kol HaTorah Kula, at Shlomo LaVilna, many others there. And he was the chief rabbi of Vilna. So years later, Reb Shimon Shkop and Reb Chaim Oizer used to get together every summer in, I think there's a forest on the outskirts of Vilna. And Reb Chaim Oizer would go to have fresh air to regain his strength. And Reb Shimon Shkop would come and talk to him and learning. So they have a lot of photographs from that period. In the Drozhgenik forest, I think, of Reb Shimon and Reb Chaim Oizer, and a lot of times they're Talmidim there, sometimes they're not Talmidim there. The career of Reb Shimon as a Magid Shir started at the age of 24. So when he reached the young age of 74, he was already, the students wanted to celebrate the Yovel, the fact that he was a Magid Shir for 50 years. That was quite an accomplishment, because he started at the age of 24. So they put advertisements in the different newspapers that they plan to put out a Sefer HaYovel in honor of the Rebbe. And they're taking essays from all of the Talmidim who are old enough to be grandfathers of the other Talmidim, 50 years worth of Talmidim. So the younger Talmidim wrote than the old Talmidim. The Talmidim didn't write Divrei Torah, though. The Talmidim wrote what the shir was like and what the yeshiva was like and what the community was like and in different communities. They were in the first 18 years they were in Telz, and then they were in Malch, and then they were in other cities, and then finally the last years they were in Grodno. So if you put together all of the essays, somebody took all of the essays in the Sefer HaYovel and he wrote a biography and a history of Reb Shimon's yeshiva just based on the essays that Talmidim wrote. In the Sefer HaYovel, they have a long contrast by Reb Shimon Shkop, something like almost 100 pages long, called Mareches HaKinyon. Very long, complicated, rich topics in Halacha. I always have the impression as if Reb Shimon Shkop led a tragic life. Had a lot of Talmidim who were very big in learning, and they after the war, those who survived, were many of them were Marbitz Torah all over the world, in Europe and Eretz Yisrael and America. Rabbi David Lifshitz and our yeshiva learned for Reb Shimon Shkop. My father-in-law was in Torah Das. He learned for Reb Shimon Shkop. Many great gedolim. One of the Rabbanim who survived, one of the Talmidim Reb Shimon who survived the war, and many of his chaverim were killed by the Nazis. So he thought to himself, why did I survive? And the others died in the stomach. It's my responsibility to go into chinuch. So that convinced him he should go into chinuch. Rabbi Kolodetsky, the one who was the Rosh Yeshiva at the Yishuv HaChadosh, at the yeshiva that the Mizrahi yeshiva in Tel Aviv. So Reb Shimon had a lot of Talmidim, but on the other hand, there was so many movements at the time, the communist movement and the Zionist movement, the anti-religious Zionist movement. There were so many different movements. Many of his Talmidim gave up Yiddishkeit completely. They say that they have the story in the biographies that during the First World War, all of the doctors were drafted in the army, in the Russian army, and Reb Shimon Shkop took sick in his village wherever he was, and he needed the assistance of a doctor, and you couldn't get a doctor. So some of the Talmidim went to the army base and they spoke to the doctors and they asked, there's a big prominent rabbi who needs medical treatment. If we will bring him to the army base, will you give him the treatment that he needs? So the doctors were all communists, whatever. So they all said, who's the rabbi? So they said, Rabbi Shimon Shkop. So he said, the Rebbe, that's our Rebbe. We're gonna go to where he is. You don't take him to the army base, we're gonna go. He's brought his Talmidim, and they weren't observant at all. They say years later, when he came to America to raise money, so one of his former Talmidim from Europe came specially from out of town to New York, and he handed him $10,000 in cash. And Reb Shimon came to America to raise money for the yeshiva. So the Talmud said, but this is not for the yeshiva because I don't believe in Torah and learning and mitzvahs anymore. This money is only for you. I only give you the $10,000 if you use the money for yourself. Reb Shimon said he can't accept the money. What do you mean? How can I take the money and I'm not going to give the tambi to Mastavi? So he had, I'm sure he must have had a lot of Akmas Nefesh from that. And then he had one son who was not also not observant, who learned, and she was not observant. Later on, he moved to Toronto, and he taught Gemara in the community day school there. I think it's called Chat, the day school. And when Rav Shimon was in America for a year, he knew his son was not a Shem HaMitzvahs. It wasn't a Shem HaShabbos. He didn't even try to get in touch with him, even though he was just in Toronto. He had no interest in meeting with him. What's he going to do? Then Rav Shimon had a daughter who married one of his Talmidim, Rav Feigl Hindus, who was in, he was, I think, a Magid Shir in Rav Shimon's yeshiva. And he was also in the Hanhala of the yeshiva. And they had a daughter. So the daughter passed away. Reb Shimon Shkop's daughter passed away, and the son-in-law passed away. They wrote it up in all the newspapers. Reb Feigl Hindus passed away. And the teenage daughter that they had was a communist and a Zionist. Zionist meant anti-religious, anti-Jewish. So there was a couple of months that she stayed by her grandparents. She stayed by Reb Shimon Shkop. So I remember when I was a student in yeshiva, when I was a teenager, they told over this story. And then later on, years later, 40 years later, it was printed in the Israeli newspaper. They told the story that when she was staying by Reb Shimon Shkop, she wasn't observant at all. When she was by her grandparents, she wouldn't be Mechal Shabbos publicly. So a girlfriend of hers came to visit her on Shabbos. And then Reb Shimon Shkop came back from davening in the morning. So the girlfriend stretched out her hand to Reb Shimon Shkop. And she said, Shabbat Shalom. Kvod Harav, Shabbat Shalom. So Reb Shimon Shkop took her hand, and he shook her hand, and he said, Shabbat Shalom. But then, after the friend left, so the granddaughter apologized to her grandfather. She said, she apologized that her girlfriend stretched out her hand. So Shem Mishkop, that's the way the story goes. Shem Mishkop said, your girlfriend didn't realize how improper it is to shake hands with a man who's not your husband. But I realize how improper it is to embarrass a girl in public, because the Talmidim had walked Reb Shimon home. There was a group of Talmidim there. So he didn't want to embarrass the girl in public. So he shook her hand and he said, Shabbat Shalom. So that's the story that I heard when I was a student in the yeshiva. Then later, the granddaughter, the story goes later, the granddaughter went to Eretz Yisrael. She married a Jewish boy, and Reb Shimon Shkop sent her a mazel tov. He was happy that she married a Jewish boy. She didn't marry a nochri. Then she had a boy. She had a demeter bris. He was happy they made a bris. So he sent a mazel tov. That's the last contact he had with her. He sent her a letter, mazel tov on the bris. And then when that granddaughter passed away, so then they wrote up this whole story in the Israeli newspaper. So that was about 20 years ago, maybe 20, 25 years ago. They wrote it up in the Israeli newspapers. And my relatives, my mechut and Eretz Yisrael, Rafi Posen, gave me a copy of that, the newspaper article, the whole story, the way the girl said, stretch out her hand, he shook her hand, the whole story was written up in a newspaper. So he didn't have that much, there was so much. Other tzaddikim also had children who were not Shomrei Mitzvah, so very unfortunate. So he didn't have that much nachas from many of his talmidim, and from his own personal family, he didn't have so much nachas. He had many Talmidim who were Marbitzei Torah. But I really feel that it was a big tragedy. Many years ago, quite a few years ago, 20, 30 years ago, alumni of Chaim Berlin put together a collection of letters by Rav Chaim Berlin. Rav Chaim Berlin was the Netziv, was the Rosh Yeshiva in Valdoshin. His family name was Berlin. And he had a son from his first wife, Reb Chaim Berlin. He had a son from his second wife, Reb Meir Berlin, who changed his name later to Reb Meir Bar Ilan. And there was a big difference in age between the two. Reb Chaim Berlin was much older than Reb Meir Bar Ilan. Reb Chaim Berlin was a rabbi in Moscow and in other places. And he was, for a while, the Netziv, when he was very old, he unilaterally appointed Reb Chaim Berlin as the Rosh Yeshiva. To take over after he retires. And there was a whole rebellion when he started saying Shir in the yeshiva. So the whole rebellion, the students didn't want him to be the Rosh Yeshiva. So he didn't last too long. Anyway, so yeah, that he then at the end of his life, he moved to Eretz Yisrael and he passed away. So when he passed away, the year that he passed away, that's when they founded the Yeshiva Chaim Berlin. So they named it after him. like Yeshivas Rabbi Yitzchak Hanan was founded the year that Rabbi Yitzchak Hanan passed away. They named it after him. So alumni from Yeshivas Chaim Berlin put up money. They collected all of the letters of Rabbi Chaim Berlin, Shuvas, and the letters of Divrei Torah and Eitzes. They collected whatever they can get, and they published it. And then when they published it, so people had more letters. So then it came out later, when they reprinted it, it became three volumes, three big volumes of collections of letters on various topics. And Halacha and Eitzes, so one of the letters, one of his students was asking him, should he marry this girl or that girl? He describes the milas and the chasanas of each girl. The Chaim Berlin gives him his recommendation. And then he writes in the letter, tragic, he writes in the letter, don't try to have a big family. Just try to have one son and one daughter. And if you'll be successful in raising them as observant Jews, you'll be lucky. The times are so difficult and the pressures are so great to become anti-religious and communist and everything. If you have one son and one daughter and they'll be observant, that'll be wonderful. That was a big difficulty. The Rav Shemishkov came to America to raise money for the yeshiva, and he stayed for about a year. And then he was going. They invited him to give shurim and shivas Rabbi Yitzchak Hanan. He was there. So many of the gedolim in Europe sent him letters that were very upset. Number one, why he's staying in America. They wanted him to come back, and more upset why he's staying in the yeshivas Rabbi Yitzchak Hanan. In one of the biographies of Rabbi Shimon Shkop, they write that the year that he taught, that he gave shurim in the yeshivas Rabbi Yitzchak Hanan, of course, it's self-understood there was no college at that time. There ain't no such thing. It's self-understood there was a college, and he knew there was a college. He was teaching in the yeshivas Rabbi Yitzchak Hanan for a year. And interesting, so they printed in some of the biographies, they printed the letter that Mashgiach Rabbi Yeruchim sent him, that he heard that terrible rumor that he's considering staying in America. How can he stay in America? Truth of the matter is that he didn't think that there was any future for the Jews in Europe. And Dr. Belkin told over years later, when Shimon went back to Europe, he went with him in a taxi to the boat. And he told him in the taxi that if I would have had a suffix whether it makes sense to go back to Europe or not, I would not have gone back to Europe. Because the Mishnah says in Sanhedrin, when you have the Bezdin of Dinimam, and it's a Bezdin of three, and you have a split vote of 2-1, so if two say Chayiv and one says Pater, so the one who says Pater is outvoted. But if two say Chayiv and one says Eini Yodea, the one who says Eini Yodea can't be outvoted. So you have to have Yosifu Hadayonim. So he says, strange attitude. He said, if I would be Mesupik, I would say any day where it makes sense to go back to Europe, I would not be outvoted, I would not go back, because I hold it's utterly ridiculous. There's no future for the Jews in Europe at all. There was so much anti-Semitism, no future. The future for the Jews is here in America. So that since he held against the Reiv, so that's why he was outvoted, so he has to go back to Europe. That's what he told Dr. Belkin in the taxi when he took him to the... And he took him to the dock to go back to Europe by boat. And then there's a period of time that he was in. He didn't think there was any future for Yiddishkeit in Europe, and he was right. The Nazis came later and they killed everybody. So there was a period of time he wanted to go to Eretz Yisrael, but he wanted to give shiur. So he sent a letter to Merkaz Harav. He wanted to give a shiur, and she was Merkaz Harav. But they sent him back a letter, we're not interested in your shiur. Our yeshiva is based on the Derech HaLimud of the Gra, and you have a different Derech HaLimud. We don't, no thank you. If you come to Eretz Yisrael, we're not interested in listening to your shiur. Well, Rabbi Shimshkop is famous for the Sefer that he wrote, Shari Yosha. He, just as a dugma, just as an example, the Gemara says in Bava Kama that we have a din that we learn from a pasuk hamotzi machaver all of her life. I want to be motzi mom from someone else, so the burden of proof is on a toveya, because the other fellow is the muchzik. So the Gemara says you need a pasuk for that. Lama likros varuhu. Common sense dictates like that. In order to be motzi mom, you have to have edim. You have to have a good raya. Gemara says no, the pasuk doesn't teach you that. That you know mitzad asvar. Pasuk teaches you something else. So the Pnei Yeshua writes in Gittin, he doesn't have it there, but he has it in Gittin, that's what the Gemara says, you don't need a pasuk. That's superficially, you don't need a pasuk. But once you learn all the Gemaras, how strong the din of Hamotz and Machavero, all of Haraya is, so it must be that it's a Gzeres HaKosim. If there's a Machlokes Rabbi Shmuel, whether Hochem and Mammon Achar HaRov, can you be Motzi Mammon based on a Rov or not? And we pasuk no, but Rav holds that you can't be Motzi Mammon based on a Rov. We pasuk like Shmuel. How can that be a Svar if it's a Machlokes Rabbi Shmuel? In so many other cases in the Gemara can't be that common sense dictates in every case. So the Pnei Yeshua says, the Aliba the Emes, it is a Gzeres HaKosev. And Yerushalmi has it, it's learned from that pasuk. So the real truth of the matter is, it is a Gzeres HaKosev. So Rav Shimshkab doesn't like that. He says, everything is a Svar. Everything is a Svar. So he gets involved in all kinds of Svaras. I remember when I was a Talmud in the yeshiva, so one of the rabbeim had learned. We were fortunate. I was born in the middle of the Second World War, so my rabbeim in elementary school and in high school were big Talmid HaChachamim who knew all the Gemaras. They were teaching us Chumash. They knew all the Rashi's from the Gemara. They didn't need Rashi and Chumash. They knew all the Gemaras and all the Tesis and all the Pnei Yeshuas. They didn't need the Pirish Rashi Al HaTorah. So I remember, and several of the rabbeim in the yeshiva were outstanding talmidim of Rav Elbel Soloveitchik. Rav Elbel Soloveitchik had Rav Chaim's derech modified a little bit, which was supposed to be very different for Rav Shimon Shkop's derech. So I remember one of the rabbeim who had learned by Rav Elbel Soloveitchik said that they say the name of Rav Shimon Shkop, that the Gemara says on the occasion of Maimon HaSinai, it was Kof Aleim Har Kegigas. So what does that mean? So you take it literally. That's what B'tach B'zar. So he said, Rav Shimon Shkop interpreted that there was such a gila shechina. It was so clear. Like if the sun is shining, someone's going to say, the moon is shining. Of course the sun is shining. Kof Aleim Har Kegigas is just a melitza. It means it was so clear. They had no choice. Of course they had to say Nasu and Ishma. What then? There's only Hashem Echad and everything is obvious. So I don't know what was wrong with it. I remember the Rebbe said that that's apikursis. I don't know exactly why is it apikursis. He's interpreting the Maimon Chazal that it's not to be taken literally. Kof Aleim Har Kegigas, it's a melitza, and he thought it's a melitza that everything was klavid itok. I don't know. Somehow those who learned by Rav Elbel Soloveitchik didn't like it all Reb Shimon's style, and they say that the Reb Shmuel Razovsky was a star student of Reb Shimon Shkop. So on one occasion, Rav Elbel Soloveitchik met Rav Shmuel Razovsky in Arizona, spoke to him on learning. So he said, not so different. His Derech Halima has come out the same as ours. It's not so different. They say Rav Shmuel Razovsky modified it a little bit. If he would have met Rav Shimon Shkop, he wouldn't have said it's come out the same. Rav Shmuel Razovsky didn't say overall that Rav Shimon's exactly the same thing. A lot of times Rav Shimon and Rav Chaim say exactly the same thing, but they say it in different language, because Rav Shimon likes to say it with an explanation. Rav Chaim just says, "Yeah, psukim, yeah, Gzeres HaKosev." And Rav Shimon doesn't like Gzeres HaKosev. He likes to give explanations for everything. I remember Rav Shimon Shkop wrote this major sefer Shari Yosha. So he asked the Mashgiach, and the Mir Yeshiva Rabbi Yeruchim was still a Mashgiach at that time. After Rabbi Yeruch passed away, then later Rabbi Chatzka Levenstein was the Mashgiach. Some of the Talmidim used to refer to Rabbi Yeruchim as the Vice Rishon, Rabbi Chatzka Levenstein they called the Bai Sheni. So Rabbi Shimon Shkop requested of the Mashgiach Rabbi Yeruchim, can he send him a bacher who knows how to learn well, who knows how to write in Farsi style Hebrew? So he sent my father-in-law, who was single at that time, and he spent about 2 years in Grodno, Rabbi Shimon Shkop. But he only agreed to go, Reb Shimon had written, in the middle of the First World War, he didn't have so many Talmidim, didn't have so many Shiurim to give, because it was the middle of a war, so he wrote the Shari Yosha then. So years later, he wanted someone to rewrite it, that it should be in an elegant Hebrew, a fancy Hebrew, instead of a plain style. So my father-in-law had a very fancy style. I remember after I got engaged to my wife, so one of the rabbis in the yeshiva read a Dvar Torah of mine that I had printed at that time in Hapardes. So he says he enjoys the Dvar Torah, and he tells me that he said the same Dvar Torah when he was my age, and he's going to print it someday. I shouldn't think that he lifted it from me. He was mechadish it. So he said, tells me he likes the content. He was mechadish it also, and he likes the style. Unlike the Shari Yoshe, if you know what I mean. I mean, he didn't like the style of the Shari Yoshe. Every so often, the stipler will quote something from the Shari Yoshe and write, Kamadumali Shalizan is Kamar Epshem. He thinks he's not sure because his style is so fancy. Sometimes the Melitzes take away from the Teuchen and you're not sure exactly what the Teuchen is. Anyway, so my father-in-law only agreed to go to Bibra Rav Shimon for the 2 years if he'll give him a private shiur every day. If he'll tell him not, he'll give him a manuscript and tell him to rewrite it. He wants a private shiur every day on every chapter of the Sefer. So he, Rav Shimon, agreed. So he did that to him. And then when the Shari Yoshe came out, it was a tremendous hit. Everybody, all the big Chiddush, all the Talmidim and the yeshivas of Europe loved it. And then Rav Baruch Ber asked the Mashgiach, he likes the same Bacher who wrote the Shari Yoshe to write his shiur. So Mashgiach said, they need him back in the yeshiva. He doesn't want to let him leave again. For a couple of years, because he was Rav Shimon for 2 years. I remember my father-in-law told me he remembers when he ate the siddur by Rav Shimon Shkop. There were other Talmidim there. He said that there were about 5 Talmidim ate matzah from one matzah. 5 Talmidim ate the kazesim from one matzah. It's not like the exaggerated shiurim that we have today, that you have to eat the whole gigantic matzah, tabakazayas. 5 Talmidim made. At that time, it wasn't so popular to have such exaggerated shiur. Rav Shimon was quite a prince of a man. They were all extremely taken by his princeliness. They couldn't, in all the yeshivas, they couldn't take so many Talmidim. So in many yeshivas, they had a policy that they can only take one student from every city. So from all the children, after Bar Mitzvah, everybody went to work after Bar Mitzvah, and one student from every village, one student would go to the yeshiva. I remember Rabbi Gerelik told us that when he learned in the Mir Yeshiva, it was at its peak, there were 400 students, and the 400 students, well, from 400 different villages. It's not like today that every boy on the block, every child on the block goes to yeshiva till he gets married. All the children after Bar Mitzvah went to work, and one from every village. If there was a big city, my father-in-law came from Pinsk. Apparently, Pinsk was a bigger city, so they allowed 2 Talmidim to come to the Rishiva. Rabbi Tippishtein, my father-in-law, both the Talmidim from Pinsk. So in Grodno also, Rav Shimon Shkop was in Grodno, they also had such a policy, they would only allow one student from every city. So every so often, a student would come and make believe he came from a different city. He would go visit his grandfather in another city and get a letter of recommendation from the rabbi there and make believe that he came from the other city. So the students would tell him he shouldn't go to the one in charge of accepting the students in Grodno because he's gonna catch him in the stunt. He should go to Rav Shimon because Rav Shimon loved all the students and he tried to take everybody in. So the students who would go to Rav Shimon, he would always see to it that they should be accepted, even though there was more than one from every city. Shimon had a different style of learning, very different style. I remember once it was on Pesach and I was learning Pesachim and I was visited by my in-laws the first couple of years after I got married. I used to visit on Pesach by my in-laws. I was learning Pesachim. So I was up to the Gemara Chamishish and Nisarva Oris Pischem and Imtzus Habelis Vachas Mehem. So my father-in-law asked me, "Oh, I'm up to that Gemara. Do I want to hear a pshat from Reb Shimon Shkop?" So I said, "Yeah." So he asked me a kasha on the Gemara. If you have 5 groups, each group had a different korban Pesach, and then they removed the hide from all of the korban, then they find that one of them was a balmum. Now they can't figure out which of the 5 korbanos Pesach is the balmum. So what's the din? So no one's allowed to eat the korban Pesach because there's a tarubis of the balmum, and the Gemara discusses what do they do with respect to Pesach Sheni. So my father-in-law asked me, Nikasha, why don't you say that it's bottle beroiv? So I told my father-in-law, the Menchas Chinuch asked that kasha, and the mitzvah's Korban Pesach. And he says, Ben HaTorah, it is bottle beroiv. It's only not bottle midirabanon because it's chaticha ruy l'skabin. a big carbon pesach. So my father-in-law said, but Rav Shimon has a pshat that it's not batel min haTorah. Are you interested in hearing? So I said, yeah, what does he say? And my father-in-law said something, and I didn't understand. So I said, pa, could you say it again? I didn't understand. So he tells me a second time. I said, I don't understand. Could you say it a third? I didn't understand what he was talking about. After Rabbi Gifter happened to be there, because Rabbi Gifter's son is my brother-in-law, so he was there, so he said to my father, Dreitem nishken kop, der jung Rabban ken Yeredeya, says gegen Yeredeya. Whatever Rabbi Shimon Kop said is against Yeredeya. I don't know, I remember when I was a young teenager, maybe 14, 15, I was learning in Brooklyn in the summertime in the Mir Yeshiva. I learned 3 summers in the Mir Yeshiva. So I remember there was an older boy who had come from Cleveland. He had learned in Telzi Yeshiva. Then he came to the Mir Yeshiva to get smicha. So he was learning Yeredeya, and he was going to have a pchina to get smicha and Yeredeya. So I wasn't friendly with him. He was much. He must have been at least 10 years older than me, at least around 25, 26. I don't know. Later on, he went to Chinuch in Toronto, and then I met him in Eretz Yisrael. So I don't know why he turns to me and he tells me he's learning Yeredeya. And I says, when you learn Yeredeya, the only Chiddush Torah that are Oiskehalten are Rab Chaims. Rab Shimon Shkops and Rab Naphtali Trop and Rab Baruch Beer, they're not Oiskehalten when you learn Yeredeya. The only thing that corresponds to the Yeredeya is what Rab Chaim said. Rav Shimon Shkop had a tremendous hashpah on all of his talmidim, and they were marbit Torah after the war was over. They were successful in reestablishing Torah all over the world. Okay, well, in that, and next week I think I'll speak a little bit about Rav Chaim Eisen. Okay, good night, everybody.